With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We currently have two staff members that are expected to be delayed and will not be with us at the beginning of camp. You know, based on positive tests. To this point, we have not had any players test positive.
Two staff members, no players. That's the word here on Monday evening. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670. This score, let's check in with our friend Evan Altman. Check out CubsInsider.com. He's editor-in-chief over there. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Evan's on Twitter, at D. Evan Altman. What's up, Redman?
I'm just enjoying the odds, man. Just trying to help you out on some of that and, you know, maybe boost them a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I know. I'm out there tweeting about golfers people have never, ever heard about. Redman and Evan, of course, coming in with the references to rappers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Method Man was his caddy, perhaps he'd have a little bit better chance. But we'll see. It's the best I can do, man. It's sports are so weird right now, and I know they're trying to come back, and it's getting around. But it's almost – I'm trying to think. It reminds me of the Quince soliloquy in Jaws, where he said the scariest part was when the rescue ships were coming, and now you're waiting for your turn to get on there. Like we've had this whole layoff, and we're sitting here. Will it happen? Will it not? And now it's sort of set, and the rules are kind of there. And now is the weird limbo. I almost feel less confident about the season now than when the players and owners were fighting over money.
I feel the same about the NBA, and it seemed like they had the best plan going, and now we're seeing all the holes in that ship. Like, okay, you're going to start on the 24th. I'm looking forward to it, but every day I'm going to dread the news, Evan, because I hate to say this because we need the Cubs, especially on this station. We really need the Cubs. We need live sports and the sports that we enjoy watching. But I would be floored if they were to somehow finish a 60-game season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I understand the protocols that are in place. And you know, I think certainly, of course, we're seeing certain players, and I forget if it was one of the Dodgers guys or something, or maybe it was the Padres. I think it was Austin Hedges, maybe, who was at some kind of a social event, you know, recently with maybe not masks and some things like that. It's like, hey, guys, like you got to – now is the time. You know, we see Jose Quintana hanging out with Tom Brady with no mask on, you know what I mean? And I think Brady is actually in the high-risk crowd because of his age, I think. So that kind of surprises me there too. I'm not sure why he's out in public, but – but, you know, these guys at least ostensibly could be more separated when they're in their own homes or out doing things. And maybe there's a little workouts here, but now you're bringing them in together. Now they are in groups. You know, the pitchers are in groups. You talk about if somebody tests positive. Well, what are the chances that one guy tests positive that first time you give it to him and he didn't give it to anyone else in the meantime? It's just so I've kind of taken to like being ignorant to some of these things, just pretending there won't be any problems because that allows me to kind of sleep a little bit better. But I'm with you, man. It's going to be it's a little bit troubling. It's a little scary, but we'll all get through it together, I suppose.
The argument that we heard for a while is if there's one sport that lends itself to social distancing. Aside from baseball, it's golf. And guys are withdrawing every single tournament because caddies are getting it and golfers are getting it. It's been nonstop. Now, they're not stopping play. They're nowhere near that. It isn't that serious, but it seems to be every week a few more players.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, again, and I understand that that's part of the reason why they have the taxi squads and so forth. But again, like I said, you know, golf is an individual sport. You know, if Tiger Woods is going to drop out of a tournament, he's not hurting anyone else. It doesn't drag down his team unless we were talking about the Ryder Cup or something. But, you know, again, if a guy has to be out and has to be quarantined for 2 weeks, that's a quarter of the season. You know, this isn't, you go on the IL for anything. There's a significant impact, and I don't mean to belittle the greater health effects of anything, but again, if we're talking about one, let alone two or three or five players who now, you know, we're already talking about a season with the legitimacy in question, now you start, you know, playing with guys who under normal circumstances would never have even gotten a cup of coffee, having to actually play meaningful roles, it really changes things up. And then at what point are you just kind of throwing guys in there for no reason other than to potentially put themselves at greater risk? It's kind of scary with the way this is all supposed to work out, but you know, hey, maybe they thread the needle somehow and things work out really, really well and nobody gets sick and everything is perfect. So, you know, who knows? Crazy things can happen.
Let's live in that fantasy world for a few minutes. We find out about the 50-man roster. 39 will be working out at Wrigley, 11 over in the South Bend facilities. What's the headline from this 50-man roster for you?
You know, I think it's more about who was left off, at least initially. And some of that may have been, you know, kind of, I think we all like to speculate on that stuff. But I think the fact that the Cubs only put 50 men on it, at least at this initial iteration, is pretty interesting to have that many spots still open. But to see, you know, I think one of the big names we had all kind of been hoping would really be fast-tracked was Burl Caraway, their second-round draft pick, the lefty reliever, really hard throwing, actually not the hardest throwing lefty reliever, even though he can touch 100, but seems like a guy who's going to be fast-tracked. He got signed to a contract really quickly. He was not on it, nor were guys like Trent Giambrone, who had been having a really good spring and is a versatile player, Zach Short and Tyson Miller, a couple guys, Short in particular, being a shortstop, which the Cubs don't have too many of. They've really only got two guys who can primarily play that role right now on the entire 50-man roster, and Short's on the 40-man roster. A little bit surprising. Tyson Miller, again, being a starter who, again, when we're talking about pitchers and guys who might not be ready, you would think. But again, I think it leaves him a little bit of room. I was pretty surprised by a few of those guys not being left on there. And I think a lot of folks maybe thought that Adbert Alzolay would have been up with in the big league summer camp instead of being at South Bend, but that's not entirely surprising. I think the real, if we even want to call them headlines, if there are any big moves, I think we may see the Cubs kind of shuffle that around pretty significantly over the next few weeks. So maybe they've got a few moves up their sleeve that'll kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit.
Naturally, as this, we're waiting on the schedule and we're finding out about players that they plan on being there or at least are available. It's interesting because, okay, 60 games. All right, we got some win totals out. The Cubs are 31.5 or whatever. What are the Cubs going to do? And Evan, they are one of those teams. I mean, 60-game sample size, tough to predict for any team. But the Cubs are truly one of those teams. I kind of throw my hands up. I don't really know. I see strong opinions that they're going to be above 500 or below 500. They're going to have their issues because of this or that. I throw my hands up and I say I'm not really sure, even though I'm in the opinion business, because if you can tell me how this bullpen's going to perform, I would say, okay, now I have a strong idea how the Cubs are going to be. They're so volatile from year to year as it is, but now there's a lot of unproven names out there.
Yeah, I think that's you nailed it with the bullpen. And I mean, that would be the case in a normal season, obviously, and it's something that we've all been kind of frustrated by, particularly when you talk about them not really being able to hold leads, walking too many hitters. But, you know, we came in, and what you're really looking at now, outside of really Craig Kimbrell and a couple of other guys, they have a lot of unproven or new names to the team that they're going to have to lean on even more heavily, not just because of the short schedule, but because we're also talking about this abbreviated summer ramp up to where your starting pitchers are not going to be ready to go, you know, 6-7 innings out of the gate. The Cubs have some guys who, you know, Yu Darvish, as good as he was last year as a strikeout pitcher, is not typically a guy who goes deep into games. He doesn't always pitch very efficiently. Kyle Hendricks is not the guy who's going to go out and work 8 innings. John Lester is not that same workhorse anymore. You know, I remember it was late last season when you and I talked on your show about kind of the career arc being on its downside for John Lester. Now, is he helped by maybe being able to have a short sprint instead of a marathon? Probably. But they're going to need to turn the ball over to some of these guys who we really don't know what we're going to get. Bullpens are notoriously fickle. And while you want to look at guys like Kyle Ryan and Brad Wick and Rowan Wick and maybe even Dylan Maples, you know, who everybody's been really waiting to come around on, do you trust those guys? Because if they're on and if they all pitch to their potential, the Cubs could be lights out. On the other hand, if they're not on, you know, we go the opposite direction in a hurry, and it's not
at least
as
it'll
if
be
a
short season
replacements. Yeah, at least we don't have to worry about it too much. You know, they can't blow more than 60 games. We know that. So we'll see. But I think it could be a strength. I think it could be a weakness. Is that kind of a cop out answer? Yes. But what else are we going to say at this point?
Exactly. Joe Ostrowski with Evan Altman, CubsInsider.com. So I think most are pleased with the universal DH coming to Major League Baseball in 2020, unless you're Dusty Baker and he's screaming, what about the children? How do you think David Ross is going to handle the DH spot?
I think it's going to be a rotating deal. And I know he said today he's talked to Kyle Schwarber about it. And, you know, I think if you polled, you know, a majority of fans out there, of course, are going to point to Schwarber. Anyway, yeah. And he clearly has done really well in that role when the Cubs have played against American League teams. He did so in the World Series. And that makes it a little bit easier because they do have quite a few guys in the outfield. At the same time, you know, Ross has said, and I think just common sense says, you do want to rotate that around a little bit. I think as much as it seems like, yeah, it should be, oh, yeah, all you got to do is go out and hit. More than anything, I mean, baseball players are creatures of habit and routine. And if you shift that just a little bit and you kind of mess that routine up, that could have some effects down the road and maybe keep guys from really being, especially somebody like Schwarber. He wants to be out there in the field. And I think not letting him do that could actually impact just the psychological aspect of his game. And that's, you know, even if it's just a little bit, that can have its effect. And I think, again, they're going to look at this as a matchup type of a deal. You know, are there times where you can put Steven Souza Jr. in there and let him do a little bit of hitting? I've been advocating for Victor Caratini. I think a guy who can switch hit and has pretty even splits from both sides of the plate does really good, especially when we're talking about, does really well when we're talking about pitchers maybe making short outings, switching back and forth, lefty righty. You've got a guy who, again, is not really he's not going to be subject to having to face a lefty and not do as well. He can switch the sides of the plate. And if we look at the strategy that could come into effect late in games, we're putting a runner on second base. Maybe you've got to swap out a Schwarber or an Anthony Rizzo to have somebody faster on the base paths. You can move Caratini out of that DH role and put him behind the plate, move Contreras to left field, mm-hmm. put him at first base. So I like that because of the strategic element. I think Ross is going to play this on kind of a game-by-game basis and just go with the matchups and see what works and try to find an advantage.
Evan, when we were looking at this season back in March, I figured, okay, it's probably going to be a three-team race. You have the Reds and all the offseason additions they made. They're the buzzy team a lot of people are jumping on. The majority would say that the Cardinals are a slight, slight favorite. Cubs, still in the mix. Maybe they can turn things around with David Ross, some positive regression on some of those guys that didn't really show up much in the second half of the season. The way this sets up, I'm opening the door now for Milwaukee because this is going to be such a wild year, and Council is used to leaning on that bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a team that sort of, they feel like they've got the chip on their shoulder a little bit, that they're sort of the little brother, if you will. And again, when you're talking about such a compressed season, and not only with the 60 games, but the fact that you're playing each of those divisional opponents 10 times, there is a significant room. You know, if you get on a little hot streak here, you know, you beat up on somebody on their home turf and you can kind of get over on some of your divisional opponents. And we've seen, again, Milwaukee kind of has that a little bit of swagger to them. And we've seen what happens when Christian Yelich can get hot. And if he can go on a run like he has, you know, it's kind of like what, almost like Jake Arrieta in 2015 down the stretch, except even more important because the hitter's out there every day. You get on a hot second half, 2-3 weeks, you could carry that team and really bring them up there. So, you know, there's tons of room. So, yeah, I think if we just remove the Pirates, who aren't even trying to field a major league organization, I think the other four teams in the division, you know, basically just throw them all in a hat and pick one, and I think your chances are pretty good either way. But, you know, I do think the Cubs have a good shot because they are a veteran team, and I do think they're coming out here looking to prove something with a new manager. I'd like to hope so anyway. But I guess we could say the same thing about just about any other team looking to prove themselves in a short race.
How much did the pandemic change the Cubs' plans for Chris Bryant and Javi Baez?
You know, it's tough to say because I think it sort of worked in a couple different directions. You know, on one hand, they might actually be able to get those guys on a little bit of a lesser deal than what they would have if there's this kind of view toward securing a future and kind of looking at this big unknown. But it really reduced a lot of the leverage they had in so many different ways, because no sooner had they won their quote-unquote kind of case in the grievance against Bryant with the service time, then, you know, essentially they almost lose that whole year. And I think the leverage anybody has to trade, if they were looking to do that, is decreased significantly. There's so much less value in trying to find someone here in this short period, and then they're going into it with less value in a year that's remaining, especially at a point where, you know, teams, are they looking to spend money? Because even if we look at Bryant being a good deal, if he gets that arbitration raise, and based on how much money he's making next year, that might be something teams are reluctant to take on in the light of some of these revenue losses, you know, let alone if they know that they're not going to be able to extend him. So, you know, if the Cubs are smart, I think this increases their desire to extend these guys, because the value isn't going to be there on the trade market, and you need something. As baseball is looking to come back, and I don't even want to think about 2022 and what could happen with labor strife there. You know, let's pretend that doesn't exist. You need faces of the franchise. You need guys who are familiar, who you can build that PR machine behind. If they're smart, those are two guys they can do it behind. But again, it's not going to be cheap, but it might be cheaper to do that than to try to move in a different direction at this point.
I know Bryant's the boss. We're all aware of that. But just being a Boris client, I have a hard time believing that Bryant would agree to a very team-friendly deal, which team-friendly a few months ago compared to what team-friendly means now, it's, you got to imagine it's completely changed.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a, you know, the bar has been moved. And I will say, you know, Bryant is absolutely, so there's this thought, I think, among some, that he's looking to break the bank and kind of go the Bryce Harper route and really set some kind of a bar, which was not the case even before all of this stuff happened. Of course, clearly, if you're looking to set a bar at this point, you have another thing coming. And I kind of really feel for Mookie Betts at this point with the way his free agency is going to have to play out. But, you know, Bryant's not looking to be the highest paid third baseman. He's not looking to set records with his deal. I think what you want is a guy who feels like he's earned some respect, wants to get a really good deal. Is he going to drop down to something that would be considered club friendly to the Cubs given the situation? No, not in the same regard that Anthony Rizzo did a few years ago in a very different situation. But I don't think the number is nearly as high as what people think it would need to be. You know, that said, the Cubs have a lot of other directions they need to go and may not see fit to even meet him at a level that would seem to make sense. So, we'll see. But then, you know, again, you've got Javi Baez, who I think recognizes his value much more so than maybe would have been the case even 2 years ago. I mean, when you talk about a guy who's on the face, on the cover of a video game, you know, when you're on MLB The Show, you're the face of it. That's, you know, you're kind of looking at that going, okay, you know, I got a little more, sway in these negotiations than maybe what I had. So it, again, it's not gonna be cheap, but I don't think it's going to be as expensive as what people think either.
I also would understand if the Cubs say, you know what, why don't we see what happens with Mookie Betts? Because that's really going to kind of reset the market for some of these top guys. Evan Altman, CubsInsider.com. Follow him on Twitter, at DEvanAltman. Evan, hopefully I'm bugging you in 3 weeks and we're talking about opening day, okay?
I would love it, and I will be here because I got nothing better to do in the meantime.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
So Cubs fans, we gave you some details on the Cubs roster. What about over on the South Side? We're not going to neglect you guys. Let's check in with the guys over at Sox Machine. My buddy Jim Margulis will drop by. 44 names we have, 44 out of 60. A lot of open spots. What are the Sox going to do? That's next. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score.
You have to trust the players that you have. And at the end of the day, we're all going to be judged by what we do or don't do or the decisions we make or don't make. I'm just a baseball guy, and I know the advantages that are given to players and the opportunities that are presented to them that will continue to allow them to grow. And by the way, if they do happen to have success, how much of a buildup is that for them as well? So
right.
You always, your expectation on players is that they're going to have success, not that they're going to fail.
White Sox skipper Rick Renteria this weekend on 670 The Score on Inside the Clubhouse every Saturday morning. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Now, Cubs fans, they started finding out about this roster, the initial roster, yesterday. But White Sox fans had to wait all the way until this morning. And it's a 44-man roster for now at 2020 Summer Camp. Workouts begin Friday over at 35th and Shields. They'll be participating in guaranteed rate field. You have to wonder, okay, when are they going to start adding some names to this list? So let's go out to the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Find him on Twitter at Sox Machine. Check out his site, SoxMachine.com. His name's Jim Margulis. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Trying to figure out why 16 open spots. What do you think?
Well, it seems like, you know, with the way the rules are and, you know, with 60-man roster, and if they're not in the 40-man, but they're on the 60-man, you can't release them and keep them in the organization. They can't pass their waivers. They're basically released from the organization. So for the time being, it seems like they're trying to wait for maybe to see what, you know, what players maybe shake loose or what players show up in what shape. And then, you know, I guess add to the roster, you know, after that, it seems like, I'm surprised more teams are going with fuller rosters given this strategy. It makes a lot of sense to me.
The Sox decisions are really, they're one of the more intriguing rosters in all of baseball because you have so many young players on the roster. Okay, this guy would normally be in triple or double A, and they're not going to have a season, but you want to see them play in some competitive action, but we're also taking the season seriously. It's like, how are you going to handle it? Let's throw some names out there. What do you think happens with Nick Madrigal?
Nick Madrigal, based on the way the White Sox are talking, Rick Hahn is, you know, not making any promises with service time or with starting assignments. We've seen this before when it comes to other players where service time is a priority. Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Michael Kopech, you know, on and on. That I'm guessing he's not going to break camp with the White Sox. I would like to see at this point, given that it's all hands on deck and that 60-game sprint, I would like to see them have the best roster available at the start of the season. So I'd like to see them, you know, if Madrigal looks fully healthy, he looks like the best second baseman available. Not necessarily given that he's a rookie, injuries can happen. You know, makes sense not to put him on the 40-man roster before they have to. But if he looks like the guy, I would like to see him be called up and set aside service time considerations because, as we saw with Luis Robert, you know, his ascension being interrupted by the pandemic and the pandemic being a very real concern, that, you know, you can't take this season for granted, nor can you take next season being normal either.
What's the plan for Andrew Vaughn?
Andrew Vaughn, it seems like, you know, he's on the 44-man list right now. He's not in the 40-man roster. So it seems like this is kind of a reps thing, that they want to get him involved and be a part of it. You know, when you look at the depth chart, the one area where the White Sox don't need anybody else right now is first base DH. You know, they have Jose Abreu, Edwin Encarnacion, Zach Collins, Yermín Mercedes. That's a hard list to break through. But it seems like, you know, with having no minor league season and, you know, no other way to develop guys, that there needs to be a list of players who you need to prioritize for 2021 and beyond. And Vaughn seems like, you know, if he goes the whole season without meaningful reps, then that's a wasted year. You don't know exactly what he can plan for 2021 or 2022. So it seems like this is a way to get an idea of how advanced he is, and maybe when they're looking at, you know, Encarnacion's option for next year or what to do with Mercedes or Collins, this is a way to keep tabs on Vaughn, see what he looks like in his first, you know, quote unquote, full pro season, and then make projections and plans for him after that.
Jim, I'd love to be a fly on the wall with some of these conversations that the White Sox front office is going to have with this year, with this small sample size. Rules are changing. So if you have guys that take a step back that really impressed last year, like Moncada, Tim Anderson, Lucas Giolito, of course, they were to take a step back, how would they look at that? And the same thing goes for some players that it looks like, man, they're way ahead of schedule. Or was it they kind of had a really good month and the league hasn't adjusted yet? I just wonder, a team going through this process of rebuilding, and they took a jump a year ago like the Sox, and now they're expected to be at least around 500 this year. How would they take any extreme success or failure?
That's one of the great questions, I think, for any team. And I think right now, based on, you know, the rosters being fairly full across the league, you know, we've had some opt-outs, but no, I guess we're not seeing like a groundswell of players that are really changing the roster constructions of certain teams, that you kind of go into the season thinking, okay, this is, you know, more or less a fairly fair 60 game sample. There aren't going to be any kind of, you know, major swings in, you know, competition levels to where like some teams are completely punting. In fact, this may be maybe the most well-rounded competition the league's had in a while, to where, you know, most teams are taking it seriously, or at least more teams are considering themselves having a chance at the wild card, because you don't know what happens. But, you know, when you think of all the extenuating circumstances and what players might be dealing with off the field, you know, if it's family members or, you know, just the stress of being nervous about being out there, or having no fans and just that being an alien experience for some guys, I can see just having some outlier seasons to where like maybe like a guy like Zach Collins hits 310 and you think, great, you know, he's never done that before, and why is he doing it now? And you maybe think he's benefiting from, you know, maybe some uncertain competition. And then the other hand, you might have, you know, Yoan Moncada take a step back and hit 230 and strike out a ton. And you shrug at that and you think, you know, maybe this is last year's, you know, they've adjusted to him what he did last year and he's striking out again like he did in 2018. Or maybe this is just a case where it's something's weird for him off the field and it's being weird for him on the field. So I think we're going to hear a lot of stories, and I think it's going to be, you know, it reminds me of like hockey after the season, you find out what everybody's been playing through or going through. I think, yeah, it's going to be the same thing here, where a lot of guys are going to be trying to tough it out because it's competition. It's, you know, they're wired to be setting aside of things that they don't want to talk about. But then, you know, as the season comes to a close, I think you're going to be hearing about a lot of guys who have been touched by this or have been very affected by it, and you're not going to find out till after the season.
With Jim Margulis, SoxMachine.com, and at Rivers Casino over the last few days, the White Sox were bet down. They go from 30-1 to 25-1 to win the World Series. I'm not saying win the World Series, but I'm just talking about making the postseason or even winning the American League Central. Let's say they play these 60 games and they finish the season. Part of my case, Jim, and you can get yourself in trouble here, when you go into a season thinking, you know what, that bullpen looks pretty good. I at least trust half of it, unlike many other teams around the game right now. Do you agree with me that you feel good about the bullpen going into the season?
Yeah, more or less. I think especially, you know, when they brought Cody Hoyer and Tyler Johnson on the 44-man list, even though neither of them are on the 40-man roster. And then they had some guys in the 40-man roster like Matt Foster and Bernardo Flores, you know, some more nondescript relievers they had to protect, and they didn't make that 44-man list. So that indicates to me that maybe they're thinking about going for at least, you know, for relievers, they don't get that expensive like, you know, outfielders do when it comes to going through arbitration. And so service time isn't that much of a concern. So if they go all for it bullpen wise and they have, you know, Colome and C-Sheck and, you know, you had a guy like Jimmy Cordero last year that looked pretty solid. Then you add in some high octane arms that haven't pitched for the Sox yet, like Hoyer or Johnson. I think Hoyer especially. Looks pretty dangerous with a high 90s sinker. He can keep the ball in park and miss bats. He's got both of those things going for him. That's a way to change the complexion of the bullpen, and in a way that they might not have done in April of a full season. I think they might be, you know, more inspired this time to have their best available 8 to 10 arms. Yeah, I imagine you'll see a bigger bullpen early on. But their best 8 arms have the, you know, have those guys taking the highest leverage situations. And that's a way to protect leads. I mean, they were pretty good at that last year, protecting the leads they had. And that was one way I was afraid they were going to regress and look a little worse, is that, you know, if Colome blew a normal amount of saves, they might not be able to absorb that this year when trying to contend. But when you have their livest 8 arms taking all the important situations, I think that's a way that the White Sox can differentiate themselves a little bit from the divisions and especially weaker teams when trying to, you know, beat up, say, on the Royals and Tigers.
It's so fascinating, Jim, because you have a team, one of the few teams, that will let their starters go. And you have a nice mix of veterans and then super young guys, some of those young guys coming off some very serious injuries. So you have to wonder, how much are they going to let them go in July and August?
Yeah, it's Michael Kopech coming off an injury. He looked pretty good in spring and was just about to ramp up into a normal workload. And, you know, I think he threw one inning and didn't quite get there. You have Carlos Rodon, who's coming back.
Did it rain again?
What's that?
Did it rain again?
Yeah. You have Rodon. You have Dean Dunning coming back. You know, and so you have a bunch of guys who are, you know, you can mix and match them maybe. Maybe you don't think that they can go 5 innings every 5 days, but maybe they can go 3 innings every 5 days. So if you can combine a couple of those guys to give a different looks, like, say, Gio Gonzalez and, you know, and Dylan Cease and Reynaldo Lopez, and just, you know, being able to pair some of the injured guys with some opposite-handed guy who's healthy, I think you can get a couple of interesting looks. And I think the other thing that's going to be fascinating about the season is whether they go with a 4-man rotation later in the year, or whether it turns into some 1950s or 1960s baseball with Al Lopez, like saving Lucas Giolito for the Twins, trying to leverage starters against certain teams and trying to figure out that you can mix and match 3 and 3 and 3 innings against some weaker teams to steal some wins there. So Rick Renteria, I think, is going to have a really interesting job and maybe a tough job. And I think he can take some chances that a 162-game season wouldn't afford, or at least, you know, the first few months of a season, you'd be too worried about, you know, running into walls in August and September.
That's interesting. Yeah, with every game meaning the same as 2.5 games in a regular season. Oh, man, people are going to lose their mind, Jim. After a three-game losing streak, they're just going to be going nuts. James McCann, very outspoken this offseason, certainly over the last few days. He spoke with the media on Friday. I didn't think that James McCann would be the star, with Lucas Giolito also speaking that day. What have you thought of McCann's comments?
I don't blame him. You know, I don't blame any player for apprehension or fear, especially players like with McCann, with young children, and McCann's children had some early life difficulties that I think maybe makes him more sensitive to just this pandemic and, you know, taking things home with him, or, you know, just that general apprehension and, you know, being on the side of, you know, like, I think we're both in the same position here, where baseball being back is good for us no matter what. You know, I try to keep that in mind when the moral hazard involved with advocating for something that might be bad for most people, but it's good for business for me. My wife is also in public health, so I'm very aware of just the idea that maybe baseball shouldn't be doing this, and maybe sports shouldn't be doing this in a perfect world where you know, money isn't a concern and they can take a full year off. But for the time being, you know, I think every player has his individual concerns and things he might not want to talk about, but, you know, has a very real risk that he's taking on. And so I'm not really going to be in the business of judging anybody this year because, yeah, we've seen it with some guys already on other teams. I could see it being the case with, certain members of the White Sox where, you know, if there is an early cluster to where, you know, three guys miss time, and then that just becomes more real for guys who have some risks at home that they might not want to, it might not feel like a safe place in the big picture for them. And you can't blame them for it. So that's why it's such a weird year and, you know, why it's, you know, a cliche, but you have to take it a day at a time because, when it comes to the day by day, the roster could look very different day over day, whether it's because guys are ill, guys are back. Some guys are ill and other guys are afraid to play. It's just going to be very weird. And even though theoretically younger and healthier people are safer from this, nobody is really safe. And nobody's really safe when you package in their family as well. And, you know, those concerns have to be respected.
Well said. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Jim.
Oh, thanks for asking. Always a pleasure.
Jim Margulis, SoxMachine.com. Follow him on Twitter. Also, at Sox Machine. Oh, it's been 10 years. 10 years since the decision. I remember where I was the second it was finally announced. But we got some new information about the decision and everything leading up to that night. I'll share next. This is Joe Ostrowski, Sports Radio 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
And this fall, I'm going to take my talents
to the Joe O Show.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.